The Housing Finance and Policy Committee will come to order, and I will note this meeting is taking place under House Rule 10.01. Ms. Hirsch, please take the roll.
Chair Houseman?
Present.
Houseman, present. Vice Chair Howard?
Present.
Howard, present. Representative Tice?
Tice, present.
Tice, present. Representative Agbaje?
Present.
Agbaje, present. Representative Bliss?
Present.
Bliss, present. Representative Gomez?
Gomez, present.
Gomez, present. Representative Hassan? Representative Hassan? Representative Heinrich?
Heinrich, present.
Heinrich, present. Representative Herr?
Herr, present.
Herr, present. Representative Juergens?
Juergens, present.
Juergens, present. Representative Olson?
Present.
Olson, present. Representative Barr?
Present.
Barr, present. And Representative Ryer?
Present.
Ryer, present. And Chair, we have a quorum.
Thank you very much. The next item of business is the approval of the minutes from Thursday, February 3rd. We noted a typo, and so just to get it clean for the official record, an updated version of the minutes was sent out by email just this morning. So we will be approving that document. Representative Howard, would you like to move approval of the minutes?
Madam Chair, I would make a motion to approve the minutes.
Any discussion, members? Seeing none, if you unmute yourself, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, nay. The motion prevails and the minutes are approved. Moving on to the main item of the agenda, an overview and update on the Rent Help MN Emergency Rental Assistance Program for Minnesota Housing from Commissioner Ho. Members, as we proceed through the presentation, please use the raise hand function. If you have a question, we'll keep a list of those who have raised their hands and take questions once the commissioner has concluded her comments. Commissioner Ho, thank you for being here. Welcome back to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your presentation.
Chair Houseman and members of the committee, good to be back with you again today to talk about the Rent Help MN Emergency Rental Assistance Program. My name is Jennifer Lemiley Ho, and I'm the commissioner of Minnesota Housing. To our pre-meeting comments, I've been the commissioner for something between 3 years or 30, depends on how we measure the months. But it's good to be back and to have an opportunity to talk to you in fairly a detailed way about Rent Help MN, the status of the federal dollars, what's been spent, the demand, and all of that information. I have about, I think, 22 slides to go through with information. Happy to wait for questions at the end or take them along the way as you see fit, Madam Chair.
And members, you did, it's on the screen, but you were also sent these, the PowerPoints, so that's available to you. Thanks.
So let's begin. I believe Dan's in charge. I'm here with Dan Kitzberger, my legislative director, and Ryan Baumtrog, my assistant commissioner for policy and community development. You would see both of their faces right behind me if we were sitting in the hearing room. And I am grateful for their continued work to support our work with you this session. I'd like to always just start by remembering that this was a temporary emergency aid program that had two main goals. It was designed by the Congress to maintain housing stability for renters that were at risk of losing their housing during the pandemic. And it also recognized that when renters couldn't pay their rent, the property owners also had a loss of income. During a time where they have ongoing mortgages and operating expenses as well. I've always portrayed the emergency rental assistance as a win-win. When renters are able to pay their rent arrearages, that allows the owners to pay theirs too. I'm going to talk a lot today about the numbers. I get so grounded when I talk to the Rent Help MN call center that 211 runs, or when I talk to our field partners, or when I talk to my own staff that is supporting the courts and others, that this is about Minnesotans. It's not about numbers. It's about real people who have dealt with an extraordinary amount of uncertainty over the course of the last 2 years. It's not just a household. It's a mom with kids. It's a veteran. It's an elderly couple. It's someone with a disability. It's a family with teenagers. These are real people who have dealt with a lot of hardship over the course of the pandemic. And I think that, you know, all of us had hoped that the pandemic would be behind us by now, and that that we would be, you know, in another place. So even as the Congress passed the bills that created this program, I think nobody could imagine, you know, where we would be in February of 2022. I want to just start, you know, we have field partners, community action programs, nonprofits, folks that have been doing the one-on-one work with households, especially households who don't have internet access, people who aren't used to getting government assistance. And this is a great quote from one of our field partners about really the relief that this emergency rental assistance has provided for folks, and how you know, it gives people an opportunity when they know that their bills are going to be paid, just to de-stress a little bit. I think it's just important to remember that even folks who might have lost their jobs initially, some were called back, but were called back at reduced hours. Some people who have a job have had to stop working to quarantine, to homeschool, and other things. So even for folks that went back to work, it certainly wasn't back to normal at all. And we also have heard from the property managers about, you know, what a scary and stressful time it's been, knowing that they had renters that couldn't afford to pay, trying to set up payment plans, and all the incredible work that property managers have done to be able to work with their renters to be able to apply for assistance for the program. Said all along that the best applications that came in the door were ones where you could really tell that the renter and the property manager were working side by side, because in order to make the right payment in the right amount to the right entity, we need to have information from both. And I think the property manager is also really understanding that this is the difference between staying housed and becoming homeless for so many people. So gratitude to our friends at D.W. Jones that have a substantial portfolio of units that are targeted to Minnesotans who make less. I mentioned also that that Minnesota housing staff have been a resource for housing court ever since people could begin filing evictions. It's been important for the courts to have information about whether or not somebody has a pending application. And so we've been able to respond with information in more than 1,300 court cases. This is over and above the regular daily jobs of housing finance that members of my team have taken on as really kind of volunteers to the effort over the course of the fall and into the winter. So let's start with the basic math. So the state of Minnesota on the bottom received a total of $673 million dollars of emergency rental assistance, $537 million of which came to Minnesota Housing in two allocations. The first allocation from the Consolidated Budget Act of, boy, it's so hard to remember what year it is, of 2020. It was signed into law by the former president in late December 2020. And then the second allocation of emergency rental assistance, affectionately known as ERA 2, was the American Rescue Plan that was signed into law by the current president in March of 2021. Again, I think that when the Congress was making these appropriations and designing this program, when Treasury was working with us to design the program, there really wasn't a sense of how long the hardship associated with the pandemic would last. I'm going to think that there was this real sense, though, that the pandemic and the economic impacts were creating an unprecedented need for help, and that's why this was set up. If you back out the cost of running the program, the support that our field partners and 211 provide, just the processing power, as well as a portion of the ERA-2 that Treasury and the Congress have encouraged us to use for broader housing stabilization services, it meant that about $450 million would be available for direct assistance. So that's kind of the barometer, if you will, that we've kind of measured our payout rates against. Next slide, please. Just want to remind folks of the broad timeline. So December, the first allocation to Minnesota Housing, December 2020. In the middle of a change in administrations, we were designing the program, hired our partners, planned the marketing campaign to let Minnesotans know that it was available. And then in the shift of administrations, we had one set of guidance that was issued from the previous administration. New team came in. They said, hold on for a minute. They redid guidance. And we were able, in the meantime, to get the second allocation of emergency rental assistance to understand what was available to us. And on April 20th, we opened for applications. By May 20th, we had started making payments. September 30th, we met a very critical treasury deadline that 65% of our first allocation of emergency rental assistance would be committed. And then the evictions off-ramp protections had kind of continued to click on the calendar that the legislature had agreed to last May and June. On October 15th, the Treasury had put out new guidance that allowed us to pay for residents who had vacated their units, but who were still engaged in the application process. On January 10th, as we realized that we were seeing an uptick in applications that was going to obligate the money very soon, we changed our policy from paying rent arrearages plus 3 months going forward to just paying 1 month going forward, which would allow us to serve more households. And then on January 25th, we announced that the application portal would close to new applications at 9 p.m. on January 28th. I want to talk about some of the unique features of the program. First of all, we always knew that this was, I mean, I could say two-time. It's a one-time allocation of money that was done twice. It was temporary. It was done by Congress as an emergency act related to the pandemic. It was huge, nearly $500 million, that we were going to design a program, launch a program, and put that amount of money out really in a short period of time. We knew that when we launched that there would be pent-up demand. I think we didn't know at the beginning, how long this would continue, but we knew that a lot of households were having a hard time making rent before the pandemic. And so we knew the need was great. When the legislature adjourned last summer, we knew that the evictions off-ramp would provide protection to individuals with a pending application. So the importance of getting an application in order to have protection from eviction was going to be really important. And then also, the Treasury has issued guidance over time. They've simplified the application and the documentation requirements. And again, as I mentioned before, they've allowed eligibility for renters who had left their units. It's just the largest program that Minnesota Housing has ever stood up. And it's certainly, the largest program with the shortest duration that we will probably ever have the opportunity to run. The program is still operating. I just want to make sure that there's clarity about the difference between having a deadline for applications that's now passed, but we still have lots and lots of applications that we're paying out. And so I just want to make sure that's clear. There was some confusion about that early on. I also think that operating this program has given us insight into what we knew, but what we as an agency hadn't kind of touched as closely as we've touched with Rent Help MN, is that this is a one-time response to really a structural problem of housing affordability for so many Minnesotans who are renters. And, the pandemic has shone a bright light on it and it's exacerbated it, but it was a problem before the pandemic, and it will be a problem when we are no longer in a pandemic. Our goal was to reach the most at-risk renters, folks who made the least. The Congress set an eligibility income limit of 80% of the area median income. We really did a lot of work to focus our marketing on very low-income households. And as you'll see in the graph, the vast majority of the people that we have had apply are very low income, earning less than 50% of the area median income. And 70% are extremely low income, meaning that they make 30% of area median income or below. I think we also knew that the economy, the rental market, and the pandemic impact households of color and indigenous households a lot. And so knowing that two-thirds of the applicants who found the program who identified their demographic data identify as Black, Indigenous, or households of color, I think helped us at least appreciate that people heard about the program, the people who need the program heard about the program, were able to apply. I think this next graph is probably, to me, the one that best explains what we knew, what we saw happening over the course of the fall and into January, and what we anticipated would happen when we announced a deadline for applications. When we first opened the program, April 20th till the end of the month, almost 10,000 applications. Our first full month of operation, over 11,000 applications came in the door. And then it quieted a bit over the summer. But when the critical dates of the evictions off-ramp began to come into play in late summer and early fall, we began to see the rate of applications coming into the system going up. And in November and December is really when I started to message that we would likely need to close in the first quarter of 2022 so as not to be oversubscribed. And then really as we entered January, we saw the pace of applications pick up even more. So by January 21st, we had already received as many applications as we had received in December. We were also talking to other states that had closed, and they talked about how when they announced closure, they had seen a surge of applications. Some had seen what they called the woodwork effect, people applying for the first time when the program was closing, even if they had been behind by quite a bit of funding. But I just want to linger on this slide for a moment so that you kind of appreciate that there was this acceleration that was happening in the fall, but that was even faster accelerating in January. Because I think that there's just been a lot of wondering why is it that we had so little news on closure. Next slide, please. We'd never run emergency rental assistance in January before. We had run the COVID-19 Housing Assistance Program using CARES Act funding in the second half of 2020. And we didn't open this program until April of 2021. So January of 2022 is the first January that we had ever experienced what would happen. January typically has higher rent delinquencies than other months. We suspect it's because of things like seasonal jobs associated with the holidays. It was also the end of the federal child tax credit payments that families had been getting because Congress did not extend that. There's been a lot of talk about just the fact that this has been a cold Minnesota winter and the price of heating our homes has been more expensive. And then, of course, we have the most recent increase in case rates and the economic impact associated with that. So I think in November and December, you know, we had hoped that we would be able to keep the program open into February. As January began to demonstrate a higher level of need, the changes just came at us pretty quickly. Next slide, please. So this is a first look at the numbers through when we closed at 9 p.m. On January 28th. I just want to foretell that these numbers will shift. There's some settling of the numbers that happens, especially at this high level of volume, because there's some pre-screening that happens and some other things that happen. We saw paper applications that were postmarked on time that are coming in the door. They're just some other things. So these numbers will shift a little. But as of the data that we had available to us when we closed the program on January 28th, over 100,000 applications from 74,000 households. Those two numbers don't line up because if you were a household who applied for arrearages plus three a while ago, you could come back in with another application when you were behind again. So we have some households who have come in more than once. And then an application can also result in multiple payments if we're paying both the property owner, but also multiple utility companies, for example. So we've made over 84,000 payments to date, representing over 48,000 households. As of, I think the payment data is through last Friday, $374 million in assistance paid out. If you look at the pie chart, the vast majority of that is for rent. And just a reminder that whenever possible, we make that rent payment directly to the property. If you take a look at the payment data, as I suspected when we opened, we were going to get just a surge of applications. It was going to take us a while to work through the applications. In October, in November, we really cleared all the backlog of applications, the vast majority. There are still a couple outliers, but the vast majority of applications, lion's share from the first 6 or 7 months of the program, have been paid. And so now we've been able to get to new applications faster. If you take a look at the numbers on the side, you can see the number of households helped represented in those dollar amounts. I know back last fall, some people were just concerned that we weren't going to meet the Treasury benchmarks. But as I mentioned on the timeline slide, not only did we meet the Treasury benchmarks, we're one of just a handful of states that have basically believed that we've obligated what's been allocated to us. I think hindsight's 2020, but I think that the story at the end of the day will be that we operated one of the fastest emergency rental assistance programs in the country. I've had two opportunities to ask the U.S. Treasury to give us more money. They had a deadline in November. I asked for $231 million of money that other states weren't spending, and we got zero. I had an opportunity to ask again in January, and I asked for $212 million. It's a Treasury-defined formula, which is why the amounts are slightly different between those two. But given the fact that we didn't get any money in the ask we made in November, we found out in early January that we weren't going to get that $231 million or any of it. I don't have any reason to believe that I will get anything from my second ask. In fact, I believe that a smaller amount of money will be reallocated across state lines if there is a second allocation. And I have no reason to predict when it is that I would hear from the Treasury, whether or not I would get any money. The governor approved and the legislative COVID-19 Response Commission authorized some additional money, $7 million to help supplement our processing needs to get through the first allocation of emergency rental assistance, and then $20 million for additional assistance, which just recently was approved to be kind of a contingency fund, depending on how the numbers shake out in terms of the applications that we receive through the deadline. A couple steps that we did take to extend the availability of funds is that we, from the very beginning, targeted funds to the renters who were most at risk of eviction. In other words, people who did owe back rent. We did not open the program for renters who did not owe back rent, and that was a way for us to keep it focused on people most at risk of eviction. And then, as I mentioned, I think a couple times before now, we did reduce the number of forward months of rent on January 10th from 3 to 1, and that basically doubled the number of households that could be assisted with the remaining funds. We did this as, we were letting folks know that that we were probably going to need to close soon. I've been doing monthly media briefings. I know, Chair Houseman, you have been a regular attendee to the media briefings, just to be able to make sure that we are broadcasting widely the level of demand and the fact that the federal aid was running out. We always knew, even as we were opening the program, we knew we'd have to close it. We just didn't know when. And I think the reality of that became really clear when we didn't get a reallocation of dollars from the Treasury. As the application trends accelerated through the fall, but greatly in January. And so, to me, the key question was, could we stay open for any part of February? Would we have funds available to pay for February rent? And then the question became, well, if we're open for any part of February, how much? And if we were open for any part of February, would we basically take, almost all renters who are behind in February, a whole month's worth, even if we were only open for 5 or 10 days in February? And as we were watching the pace of applications pick up, it became clear by mid-January, that the odds of being able to have enough money to be able to pay February rent were rapidly decreasing. And it was hard to imagine what you would do if you had allowed a bunch of people to apply for February assistance and ran out of money. How would we manage a situation like that? And so it seemed like the hardest option, but the best option, was to just be upfront with people that we weren't going to have enough money to pay February rent. Next slide, please. This is a real detailed timeline of kind of the steps leading up to the decision to close to new applications. I'm not going to go over it in painful detail, although happy to come back to it if people would like to go over the detail of it. But you know, basically, yeah, I've been talking to the media on a very regular basis, started indicating in the fall that the program, reminding people that the program's temporary and that it was going to end. It was just a question of when. And you know, got some good media coverage on that. But we really wasn't 100% clear how big the application push was in January. So it wasn't absolutely clear to us until about the 20th of January that January was going to already, naturally, without a notice of closure, be the largest month we had ever had in the program. And we knew there would be a surge of applications after the announcement. And so I have a board of directors. I needed to go to my board and discuss the decision to close with them, and went from that board meeting into a media briefing to let people know that we would be closing at 9 o'clock on Friday night, the 28th. We needed to close the portal over the weekend to be able to transition.
Commissioner, I'll just note that's a typo there. I think you meant to say 29th and 30th. So you might want to correct that for future.
For this afternoon. Thank you. Yes, so the 29th and the 30th over the weekend, we had the system down because we needed to be able to close off the parts that would allow people to apply. We needed to provide information about the status of applications, and we wanted to be up and running again on Monday morning so that people continue to track the status of their applications and we could continue to provide information to the courts for people who are in housing court. Just to give you a sense, I mean, the run rate of this program is somewhere between $50 million and $80 million a month. So this isn't about could a couple million here or a couple million there pay for February or pay for, I know as many would have liked, all the way through the final date of the evictions off-ramp, June 1st. It's a substantial burn rate. And so it wasn't plus or minus a little. It's plus or minus a lot, I guess, is the way that I would put it. And I mean, it was important to get the deadline right so that we could have a high degree of confidence that we could pay the applications that came in. People have had to make, I'm painfully aware it's past the first 5 days of February. And people have had to make some hard decisions about February rent, people who had come to rely on this emergency rental assistance program. But to have people think that they might get funding when we were confident that we would run out, just didn't seem like a good way to do this. It just didn't feel like we would be good stewards of this limited federal program. Setting the deadline, it felt a bit like a fast moving train because we were just learning what January was as the days of January passed by. There's just some logistical things. I needed board approval. I needed to give notice to applicants and so that they would know by when they needed to complete their applications. We needed to be able to do the systems maintenance. We wanted to be back up and running on Monday. It was the end of the month. So folks who hadn't paid January rent, who were eligible for the program, basically had already had most of January to get an application in. Just specifics of the rollout of the deadline. We had a board meeting the morning of the 25th. We were on the phone talking to the many, many stakeholders and then went to press at 1. that really, really broad coverage, local TV, radio, print, plus all of our partners. We're letting people know. 211 was there. We doubled our service capacity before we made the announcement, our server capacity. The server still crashed because of the high volume. Well, it didn't crash. I'm sorry to my technical people who are listening. I can just hear them right now. It didn't crash. It slowed. But some people had problems with access. But we got that fixed in a couple of hours by basically quadrupling the server capacity. And then we had field partners and 211, you know, there with extra staffing in order to support people who are in the process of making an application in the final days. And as we suspected, the applications came in as estimated. So final tally. The last 3 days of the program, we saw over 11,000 applications come in, which was greater than the first full month of operation in May. We had over 5,000 applications come in on Friday alone. But as we were monitoring both the online portal and the 211 call line, we did see activity begin to taper as we headed towards the 9 p.m. deadline. There was nobody waiting to talk to 211 at 9 p.m. on Friday night, the 28th. And 5 minutes before the deadline, there were only 5 online users in the application portal. And so we feel like the announcement was successful in letting people know that they had until 9 p.m. to be able to get an application in. You know, I mean, the hardest thing about this is knowing how many people need this help. And knowing that it is a one-time resource and that it's probably not coming back. I mean, it's not a part of the conversation anymore in the Congress. There's simply the slim chance of reallocation from the Treasury. We are, putting information out. I mean, basically what we're going to is, life before the pandemic. There's energy assistance. There's emergency assistance through the counties. We have our Family Homeless Prevention and Assistance Program. But the hard reality is that so many Minnesotans can't afford the place that they call home. And, it's hard to know what the right word is to think about how I will feel about what it was like to administer this program when all the dust settles. But it's really amazing to think about the fact that we've had the opportunity to put hundreds of millions of dollars out there to help people with their housing costs over the course of the last year. And it's also really, really hard to know that our ability to do that has come to a close. Although we'll emphasize that we are still processing all the applications that have come into the system. I suspect because the processing of applications can sometimes take a fair amount of back and forth, it can take some time to make sure we have all the information that we need on both the renter as well as the property to be able to make that payment. I suspect, Madam Chair, I will be back with you again as we have a clearer and clearer picture of the final numbers for the program. And I suspect I'll probably deal with the Treasury and auditors and others for several years to come as this program resolves itself. So thank you for letting me just, I don't know if I hit you with more detail than you want or less detail than you want. And I tried to aim for a little bit more than less since we haven't had an opportunity to talk about this for a while. And with that, I would be happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Commissioner. To that that last slide of the final tally, I've all of the work I've done on housing, I've just always been so grateful for our partnership with all of our the advocates and others, other elected officials and so forth around the state, who have always been part of outreach for us as we are trying to solve these many challenges. And I happened to be with Ramsey County Commissioners on, I believe it would have been January 26, when one of the commissioners said, he referenced the announcement you had just made the day before, and he realized the urgency. He said, so we have to get busy right now and contact everyone because they've just got three more days to apply. I mean, this was the urgency of a Ramsey County commissioner who realized they had a job to do. And I think that was happening all over. So those numbers that came in at the end, I think are the direct result of all of our partners in this work all around the state who worked hard to try to capture as many more as they could. So members, we'll maybe get the screen back to active listener and who does that. And then we will have questions and we'll start with Representative Tice.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you for the presentation, Commissioner Hall. Obviously it's been something that I've really been paying attention to as well and been hearing a lot about. So I have about half a dozen questions. And if you want to talk offline sometime, that's fine with me if we want to go in greater detail. But one of the things that I heard the most from was a lot of friends and housing providers. They waited for months and months and months to get money. Were those requests satisfied then with the numbers that we're seeing, like October, November?
Madam Chair and Representative Tice, on the payment slide where you see those very large payouts in October, that's really when we began to clear the backlog of early claims that had come in. And I'd say that's when the payment end of the program really started humming. And it certainly, I have received a lot of calls, letters, emails, especially early on, where's my payment, where's my payment, where's my payment. But in October, people who had been waiting for a payment for a bit really did begin to see the checks coming in. And that kind of broader concern, at least in terms of the volume of inquiry that I get, has really greatly reduced as we cleared the backlog. There are still some, a small number of outlier applications, but the vast majority of applications from their, all through the summer have been resolved. They haven't all been paid. I mean, some were denied for not being eligible, but the vast majority of all of the early claims have been paid. I mean, we've put out more than $374 million as of last Friday.
Representative Tice.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For those that were coming in more than once, was there some type of follow-up to see what's holding them back now? Where can we probably work with them to point them in a direction to get them on a more stable ground? I don't know if I'm wording that right, but basically I'm saying those that have come twice, when I look at participation rate in the workforce at 67%, you know, do they need help getting back there and how can we do that? Is there any type of help in that area?
Commissioner.
Chair Hausman and Representative Tice, I've been very focused on running the program, and there's some structural issues around low-income renters and the price of rent that we knew was there beforehand. Federal rental assistance only serves one out of four or one out of five households who would be kind of income eligible. It's one of the only federal assistance programs where you can be income eligible and not get assistance. We also are using a part of the ERA-2 allocation, as the Congress and Treasury directed, for housing stability services. So we are in the process of working with selecting organizations that will provide ongoing assistance to help people with these longer term fixes. But people were having a problem paying rent before the pandemic. And I think just the economic impacts and the family and the health impacts have done that. I would defer the questions on the job market to my colleague, Commissioner Grove.
Representative Tice, that question, it occurs to me we should take up at a future meeting because I'm guessing it's probably easy to put together a whole range of resources available for what you're asking is, how do we help stabilize lives and get them to a better place? And so let Mr. Wirth, if we just maybe put that on our agenda to think through how we might revisit that question. Representative Tice.
Thank you, Chair Alderman. And you're absolutely right. I'm kind of throwing that out there for food for thought, for something we can go further and maybe try to help and figure out what we can do. But I have another question for the landowners that applied and they couldn't get a renter's signature. Whatever happened with that group?
Commissioner.
Commissioner Hall.
Chair Houseman and Representative Tice, I'm just taking a moment because that is not something that has ever been flagged for me as being a significant problem.
Okay.
Representative Tice.
Thank you, Commissioner Hall. And then I think I have one more. I'm glad to hear you talk about, you know, we still haven't addressed housing and how expensive it is. I was talking with Housing First yesterday and they said in Eagan, they have, that's about 65,000 folks. They only have 6 or 7 homes for sale. And I've said this so many times. We've had so many phone calls about, hey, you want to sell your rentals? We really need the housing. And it just scares me to death that we're going to lose so many of them. And Greg and I have had that conversation of, you know, now that we're at retirement age, and that's what we had the houses for, was retirement age. When do we sell and all that? So that really concerns me a lot, is where a lot of these folks are going to go. And again, you know, I really can't say enough that we need to look at the cost of housing and where do we go from there, not just, you know, how do we take care of rentals, but also how do we rebalance home ownership and get folks back in? I appreciate the slides. I hope that we learn a lot from what we did and what had happened. And so going forward, I would absolutely love to talk further on what that means for Minnesotans. What do we look at? So thank you very much.
Representative Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Commissioner Ho and your team for the overview of this and just administering a program that clearly so many Minnesotans needed this over the pandemic. So thank you for being here. So I sit on the Ways and Means Committee, and yesterday we had an overview of the findings from the Select Committee on Racial Justice. And it told both of like where we've accomplished things over the last year, where the challenges are and where the opportunities are. And one of the things we talked about was housing, and I was really struck by both the good work we've all done, many on this committee and through the agency and others, to tackle some of the racial disparities, but was also taken back that one of the things that the presenter warned us and talked about was just the abrupt end to rent help, and that what that means for, you know, the continuation of racial disparities in housing. Just I think you showed on that graph, like who is served by this, where the needs are. And so it really just brought that into starker contrast that until we get to some of the more structural issues around lack of affordable housing, around home ownership rates for BIPOC communities, we really need to make sure that we have, you know, rent help has been there and what's going to happen now. And just I think the words used yesterday were crisis of inaccess with the abrupt end to rent help. And so just curious if you have thoughts and what the agency is thinking, like what do we do to make sure we don't go backwards on the good work we have done so far? And, you know, rent help really has been needed and continues to be needed, as we saw with the chart and kind of where we ended too. So just thoughts on that. Thank you, Commissioner.
Sure.
Chair Houseman and Representative Olson, thank you. I think I want to contextualize abrupt end. Because I appreciate it. I did not have information available to be able to forecast a slow tapering of the program, and the information that I was receiving on a daily basis in January on the incoming applications and the fact that it was going to be the biggest month ever was happening as the days went by. And so if I had guessed on December 31st, when would I need to close the program? I wouldn't have guessed January 28th. But if I didn't close the program on January 28th, I would have had the dilemma of having everybody who had February rent due come into a program that was going to be oversubscribed. So I just want to say that January pushed me into a corner, but I needed to give people as much notice as I was able, but January was clicking by. And so, you know, I apologize for the abruptness, but it was the way that January unfolded that forced my hand on that. So I just want to speak specifically to that. Yes, I mean, I think the level of need is enormous. And I think going back to Representative Tice's comments as well, I mean, there's some structural issues in our rental and home ownership markets that need to be addressed. And I know the chair would prefer that I not deviate from topic, but I look forward to coming and talking about the governor's housing and homelessness budget and bonding proposal soon, because I think it really is about trying to deal with the need to address supply, cost, and really understanding how do we meet the needs of lower wage Minnesotans.
Representative Olson.
Yeah, thank you. And Commissioner Ho, I apologize. The abrupt end wasn't the focus. Like, that was from the slide that it actually said that on the slide. That was not my analysis specifically. So I apologize for that. I was more wanting to focus on where we go from here and investments in making sure. So I just wanted to say that and hope we continue that conversation. And I know we will as we put together budgets and priorities and have more conversation on that. So thank you.
Chair Huffman, Representative Olson, I hope I didn't sound defensive, but I just really want people to understand how January unfolded. And so I apologize if I inappropriately read into your words, but I just wanted to take that moment to address what I think many people have felt. So thank you.
Representative Olson, were you finished?
I was, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Representative Ryer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Commissioner Ho, for being here and going through all of this. I, like Representative Olson, am interested in the going forward and with maybe a slightly different lens. When you're standing up a huge program, I know from my program management days that there are many things that you can plan for, many aspects of risk assessment you can do, risk mitigation, and that another important piece is the debrief and the learning at the end of a project. So I'm wondering, given the ups and downs in the program implementation that you talked about earlier, where you would go from here in terms of recognizing the COVID's not gone, recognizing that the housing crisis that Representative Tice mentioned, all of those things, how does that affect, what's your learning, what's your organizational learning or your plan for doing that so that you can take advantage of the challenges that we've all had to go through?
Commissioner.
Chair Houseman and Representative Ryer, thank you. I think, again, it's going to be several months before Rent Help MN is over. We're just done taking applications. I think there's a lot more learning that we will do in the coming months. I think we wanted to go big before the pandemic. We knew that there were, a lot of housing needs across the state that were impacting small communities, every corner of the state. We knew that there's rental challenges. We know there's homeownership challenges. And we know that private market takes care of housing for folks at the high end. The role of government is to see what we can do to create incentives to meet the housing needs of people that make less money. I think that what the conversation around housing stability and what people can afford versus the price of rent that the pandemic has intensified, I think might help us in the conversation about what are the returns on the investments that we make in housing and how does that support people's school, their health, their education of kids, their ability to age in place. You know, all things that when I became housing commissioner, I knew, but I feel like as a Minnesota housing community, maybe we just feel it all the more acutely because of what we're going through together with this. I think as we have a policy discussion around the state's eviction laws and the impact of evictions, yeah, I think there's really an opportunity to learn about how behavior changed when there's help paying the bills and how the conversation around housing stability and long-term housing stability, like how the state's housing laws shape the impacts that this has on families. So I look forward to the opportunity to talk more about that. I just think this is going to require a year-over-year investment. I had been stupidly optimistic in December that we maybe were going to get a federal Build Back Better bill that had the largest federal investment in housing since the New Deal. Oh, silly me. I won't try to forecast what happens there, but it seems to me that this is an area that deserves a full press from the federal government, state government, local governments, private, both for-profit and nonprofit, workers in the space. But it's going to require a full court press, and it's going to require a sustained one. I played basketball from fourth grade through college. It's hard to sustain a full court press, for a long period of time. But we are going to have to have that resolve. So I'm looking forward to coming back and having the opportunity to talk about the range of investments that the governor is proposing for housing in Minnesota, because I think it's certainly a good opening play in terms of where we need to end.
Were you finished, Representative Fryer?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would just add an observation that given all of that, I have a worry about a cliff for evictions and a rise in evictions, people not being able to pay their rent. I worry on behalf of the tenants. I also worry on behalf of the landlords and the entire housing system. So I hope that as a committee, we also have conversations about that going forward and that we do it soon. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Egbeje.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair, and thank you, Commissioner Hope, for being here today. I kind of want to just name something that has been coming up in the community a little bit, especially as we're thinking about what forward steps could be. And it's sort of that feeling of instability, nervousness, fear around what will happen next for people who can't make their rent. And I think we kind of have like a little bit of a tension between the protection, the very last protection that we had in the off-ramp for the moratorium, which is through June 1 of, if you as long as you have a pending application that you would still be protected. And then also understanding, as you explained to us today, that it's the dynamics of the Rent Help Minnesota Assistance Program and just how quickly people needed that and how much need that there was. So for me, that's kind of what comment I wanted to put out there, and happy to get your reaction to that. But my real question is really just kind of what is available now for people who are asking us, like, what can I do if they either had not been able to get a rent help application in or may need help in the future. through the June 1st period.
Commissioner.
Chair Houseman, Representative Abaje, thank you for the question. When we were negotiating the language of the off-ramp in conference committee, Representative Howard and Chair Houseman will remember those conversations well. I think we didn't even talk about, will this money cover the whole period? I think that June 1st was agreed to because at the time, people felt like the program was moving slowly and they wanted to give me enough time to process applications. But I don't think we ever had a conversation about when we might run out of money because it just wasn't where we were last May and June. I think we return to a somewhat tattered safety net. Emergency assistance is done through the Department of Human Services and the Minnesota Family Investment Program through counties. My understanding is that counties have a lot of discretion in terms of how that money is made available to people. It's the rules are, in my humble opinion, kind of written around scarcity, trying to limit how often people can get or how much they can get, as opposed to being written around responding to families in crisis. There's been some conversations, I know, in the metro area about, I think the Family Housing Fund has been engaged, some philanthropy has been engaged, others have been engaged about the difference between how emergency assistance operates in different counties. In Ramsey County, for example, emergency assistance was available at housing court, which I think some people identified as possibly a best practice. But there's also just kind of like, I think Brian Paulson at the Polish Foundation described it as no right door or a runaround, that sometimes you have to prove that you're not eligible for something else in order to maybe be eligible for something else. Our agency, of course, has family homeless prevention and assistance. That can be available through counties or through nonprofit agencies, community action programs. There's just different resources. But there's no emergency economic assistance grand design that is designed around families in economic crisis. I think that that is a subject that deserves attention. It's a conversation that the governor's office and philanthropy and some of the advocates and I have had, even as we were standing up our emergency rental assistance programs, kind of to appreciate that running a statewide uniform program, even if time limited, would be an opportunity to understand what a different type of model could offer. I think that there's still discussion around the pros and cons of kind of a one door versus multiple doors, and if it's multiple doors, is it standardized or not standardized? I think that's a conversation that will continue with us, but there's no debating need.
Representative Badshay, did you have anything further?
One more thing. I think you're completely right about that. The need is there. Are we looking at, and I think the next step is really to look at what does a systemic change, a transformational change look like in supporting these families, particularly, as you said, most of the people who have been helped by rent help have been lower than 50%, income, median income. And so I think, I would want to continue conversations with you. I hope this committee will continue these conversations. And what does that systemic transformation look like of supporting families to ensure that they are stable in their housing? Because we know that that leads to so much more. So thank you.
And I think you've asked the question that should consume a huge amount of our time in this legislative session. So thank you for that. Representative Howard.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Commissioner, for being here today and for the presentation. And thank you to both you and all your staff that have worked over the past many months to provide
long hours and tens of thousands of families the peace of mind that they're going to be able to afford their home. But I wanted to return us really to your first slide, which said the goal of this program is to maintain stability for folks at risk during a pandemic. And just to call out, we are still in a pandemic. And the other slide that jumped out to me, and maybe is the most important slide that you presented, Commissioner, was the one that showed the need facing Minnesotans increasing, not decreasing, right, as we're sort of pulling the rug out from them. And again, Commissioner, you don't have the ability to just print money and have new resources from the federal government. But it seems important for this committee and this legislature to realize, in a sense, there's a $7.7 billion elephant in the room. We have a surplus. We have the opportunity to make value choices about how we're going to respond to the needs of our community. And so it's just important to make that comment. But a few questions. One is, you mentioned, I would love to try to have this committee get at the notion of how much resources would be needed to ensure that we would be able to have assistance available for folks through June 1st, through the protection of the eviction moratorium off-ramp. I know some of the folks on the front lines working in communities have suggested that that would be about $300 million. And I was trying to do some rough math with the figures you were describing. Does that sound about accurate to you?
Commissioner.
Chair Houseman and Representative Howard, I don't want to say anything that sounds like forecasting, because I guess I will say that I have learned something different every month in this program in terms of what's happened. And I think none of us have been able to predict what's happening with the economy. But our run rate has been between 50 and 85 million dollars a month. So if we're talking about the ability to move quickly to refinance the program through June, we would be talking about being able to pay some portion of February, March, April, and May rent. So 4 months of rent, on that range, somewhere between 200 and 300 something million. Sounds about right.
Representative Howard.
Thanks, Madam Chair, and thanks for those numbers. And I know that you and your staff have been, we've had many meetings just in the last week to try to talk about this. And to me, when you look at that number, 200 to 300 million balanced against our $7.7 billion surplus, even more when you take into account the federal ARPA dollars, and you balance again that with the immense need of folks who, no fault of their own, have fallen behind during this pandemic, it really feels like we face a values choice about what we should do as a legislature. And so I guess my question is, does the governor support putting additional resources into rental assistance so that we could ensure that resources are available through June 1st?
Commissioner.
Chair Houseman and Representative Howard, I think the first thing, I will answer your question, but the first thing I want to emphasize is that time is of the essence. And so to work through the regular legislative timelines and have funding available in May or June, it has a whole other set of problems, including the fact that people who are behind in February, March, April, and May would not have had an opportunity to apply for that. But so let's say that time is of the essence, and this could be done in short order, like some of the other actions that the legislature has done in the early days of session. Minnesota Housing has the ability to reopen the program, but come the final months of session, we will be in the phase out part of the program. So appreciate that I've got over 600 people that are working on this. But as I work through applications, we will have have support for folks who still have the pending applications out there until we've resolved the last application, which could be a while from now. But I have the ability to reopen the program if the legislature were to work very quickly to do that. And I guess I believe that if the House and the Senate sent the governor a bill, I believe the governor would sign that into law.
Representative Howard.
Thank you, Commissioner. I just want to underscore words that you said, that time is of the essence. That seems very clear that we need to work urgently to address this. It's nice to hear that the governor would potentially sign it into law. I think we'd like to, you know, there's been some discussion of other actions that could warrant early action this session. Some of those, like the UI issue, would provide millions in tax breaks to businesses like Walmart and Home Depot and folks that really made huge profits during the session. If we can set up that proposition that deserves early action, then we should certainly set up the proposition that we can help Minnesotans who are falling behind their rent, that we can ensure that we're going to keep people in their home during the pandemic, a proposition that we set up when this pandemic began, and have together done, I think, a fantastic job of making sure that folks maintain housing stability during the pandemic. And so what I would hope is that the House, the governor, and the Senate can be clear in their words and in their actions that this is a priority for urgent action, because, as you said, Commissioner, time is of the essence.
Does that conclude your comments, Representative?
Chair Houseman, may I?
Commissioner?
Thank you, Chair, and Representative Howard. I also just think it's very important that we understand the specific words of the evictions off-ramp and the protections, because it does reference federal emergency rental assistance. So the type of money that would be used would matter. So I would point to the $1.2 billion elephant that is the state fiscal recovery fund, perhaps more than the $7.7 billion elephant that's the state general fund. If you were to do it with state general fund money, you would have to change the words in the evictions off-ramp as well. And those were hard-fought, hard-won words.
Representative Tice, was that it for you, Representative Howard? Representative Tice.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Commissioner Hall. I had a question, which I was going to ask later, but forgot. So I don't remember, and I apologize. But when the payments went out, did they go to the landlords or to the tenants? And then did we do an audit to make sure that money did get to the landlords? Thank you.
Commissioner.
Chair Houseman and Representative Tice, in the vast majority of instances, the payment went directly to the property. And I certainly have heard from both renters and property owners alike that they were happy when they got the check. I know that our friends at 211 and our field partners, I actually just had the opportunity to listen to a couple phone calls, people who called 211, and they were actually willing to sit on hold just to wait to say thank you. Which was really sweet. I've gotten some really nice handwritten letters from property owners who got their check. And also have gratitude for just the integrity of property managers who, in some rare circumstances where the check landed in the wrong place, just sent them back. This has taken a lot of cooperation, a lot of patience for folks to be able to work together to make this thing work. But I hear stories. I would say since October, I've heard more thank yous than I heard before October, which suggests to me that things are going well. I mean, anything further, obviously, now in February.
Sorry, Representative Tice, anything further?
No, thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. I don't see any other hands raised. Mr. Worth, am I missing anybody?
No, Madam Chair.
Okay. In that case, We have taken in a lot of information today, but I think Representative Igbaje raised the challenge very well, the work that we have to do together in the next few months. And we hope we have some productive conversations also with the Senate on this issue. So And I think the context is specifically in that last question, this little bit of good news, and that is when you finally have processed that remainder, the backlog of applications that have already come in, there will be $450 million in the hands of landlords who can continue to provide safe and stable places to live. And add that to an earlier, that 100 million, does anyone remember when we did that earlier program for 100 million? So that's, and that also went directly. And so $550 million is a lot of money. It shows how great the need is because we haven't finished yet. And yet I think that's a little bit of good news we can take from your presentation today. So with no other questions, let me see what I, our next meeting will be on Thursday, February 10th at 10:30 a.m. There being no other business before the committee, we are adjourned.